So we're down to our last presentation. This one's going to be done virtually. And I think I see a virtual Scott Rothenberg there on our screen. Scott is well known to all of us, yes. Former chair of the State Bar Appellate Section, a consistently highly rated speaker. And pertinent to this topic, sanctions, he served as special disciplinary counsel on behalf of the State Bar of Texas Commission for Lawyer Discipline and was panel chair of a Commission for Lawyer Discipline Grievance Committee. So with that, Scott, why don't you wrap us up today with your presentation on sanctions?
Okay, let's bring her home. I was going to skip over my usual mandatory disclaimer, but now I kind of have to do it, so let's get that out of the way quickly. I am a panel chair for the Harris County District 4-6 Grievance Committee, and I also have been a director of the State Bar of Texas. However, nothing that I say today is in any representative capacity for any entity, state bar or otherwise, or grievance or otherwise. And everything that I say today is solely in my capacity as a lawyer who has managed to be licensed for 37 years and has no findings of professional misconduct, legal malpractice, or sanctionable conduct against him so far. Knock on wood. We're going to talk a little bit about sanctions orders under Texas law first, and then we're going to spend the rest of the time kind of talking about a cautionary tale that you may or may not have heard about in the news recently, but I think there are some real lessons that can be learned from it. So first, Texas law. Sanctions orders, when I started practicing law back in the other century, the 20th, really weren't that much of a big deal from a dollar standpoint. I mean, you'd see $100, $250, $500 if it was a big case, sometimes as much as $1,000 or $2,500. And that kind of was about it back in the 80s and 90s. Since then, I can tell you that in the last 10 or 15 years, I've personally been involved on appeal. I didn't cause these. In two $1.3 million sanctions matters and one $150,000 sanctions matter. So I will suggest to you that these sanctions matters are growing not only, I think, in frequency, but definitely in size. And, you know, obviously we want to do everything we possibly can to avoid being the subject of a sanctions order and know what to do if we find ourselves the subject of one. So, the first thing that we need to deal with is a conflict that often comes up in sanctions contexts. We must determine if the sanctions are being requested just against the lawyer, the client, or both. Why does that matter? Well, the Supreme Court has told us since Transamerican versus Powell back in 1991, and as recently as the Nath case a few years ago, that the sanctions should be visited upon the offender, so that the trial court must make a determination or at least attempt to determine whether the failure in question is attributable to counsel or the party or both. And the court, the Texarkana Court of Appeals elaborated, and the Supreme Court has adopted this language, a party should not be punished for its counsel's conduct unless the party is implicated apart from having entrusted the legal representation to counsel. Okay, so let's look at a situation where substantial monetary sanctions are being sought against both the lawyer and the client for failing to timely produce requested highly relevant documents. They held on to them throughout the litigation. On the eve of trial, they pop a bunch of documents on opposing counsel and intend to use them at trial. The lawyer didn't produce the documents because even though the lawyer specifically requested them from the client withheld them from their own counsel until the sanctions motion was filed. So the opposing party files a motion for sanctions, seeking discovery sanctions under Rule 215 for the failure to produce these obviously relevant documents until the eve of trial, and requests sanctions from both the lawyer and the client. Well, I mean, that's sort of reasonable because the opposing party doesn't really know who is responsible, and basically they need to file the motion in an effort to determine which of the two is going to end up accepting responsibility for the failure to timely produce the documents, if any?